This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. We're here, we're live. It is Thursday, already deep into April. Huh? It's happening. Pumelele Mashiro.
Deep into April.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Baba, did you not see how dark it is outside?
I feel like we're
deep into winter.
And we are. Listen, this weekend, I mean, while we're going to not talk about weather, because that's what boring people do, right? Over the weekend, it suddenly struck me like there's a curtain and we're on the other side of it and we're now far away from summer. It's done. Forget about that. There's no more.
But I saw the coolest tweet ever that says South Africans only recognize two seasons.
Yeah.
Summer and winter.
Yeah.
Everything in between, we're like, how hot is it? When is it? Yeah, how cold is it? We don't know.
And the best people to ask about this are people in Durban, because the minute it is anything less than 28 degrees, they're like, oh my God, it's freezing.
And they have their leather jackets out.
For sure. All right, so much to do this morning. So many things to talk about, so many things to get into. I want to start off with this, which is a nice piece of feedback for Pumi from Andrew. Now, you remember last week, Thursday, Pumi had to start the show all on her own. She had to handle everything because I woke up late. So Andrew says, hey, Gareth, just listen to your podcast of the show from Thursday last week. I must compliment Pumi on the way she single-handedly ran with things. Most other people would let things fall apart, but she was professional and just got on with it. For a socialist, she did a great job. She's clearly a closet capitalist.
Good morning, Andrew.
Jokes aside,
I am not a capitalist.
Please.
I'm a mother.
There we go. And that's the most practical job in the world. Jokes aside, please pass on the compliments. So there's Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right. We got the Burning Platform today with Ivo Fechter joining us on Skype. He's going to be talking about a lot of things. The President Cyril Ramaphosa, continues to say stupid stuff. The EFF say that they could be forced into a coalition with the ANC if they don't win the elections decisively, which should make you wonder whether it's a good idea to vote for the ANC or the EFF, particularly because they are so different. Bantu Holomisa saying, not a single party can beat the UDM on ethics and good governance. All right. Ace Magashule saying that he has a few words at the Chris Hani commemoration, even though he has been... he's been fingered in so much corruption at the moment. The guy's basically swimming in it. And he's got a bunch of goons who are running around. You know, the book that Peter Louis Myberg has just put out, which basically accuses Ace of being the arch gangster of the Free State. He's got people who want to burn books. They want to interrupt book launches. These people are not big believers in democracy. And clearly they are gangsters, even if Ace is not.
I ain't saying nothing. I'm just sipping my coffee.
Yeah, in case Ace comes for you, right? Because he's a dangerous fucking man, this. Anyway, so lots of things to talk about. That's in the Burning Platform a bit later on. But we've got a couple of things that I thought might be interesting for you to start your morning. First and foremost, Chris has a comment here. He says, and he's sending this from the Norwegian Arctic where he lives. Chris says, hey guys, so far this year, the death pool, you know, Pumi, we have a death pool on the show.
Yes.
Everybody has someone. And none of our people in the death pool are dying. And everybody else is dying that isn't on the death pool. So he says, so far this death pool has been full of sad surprises. Although not an A-lister, one of my favorite performers, a guy called Sam Lloyd, has recently been diagnosed with inoperable brain cancer, which has since spread to the rest of his body, including lungs, liver, and spine. So unfortunately, he's probably not going to make it.
Who the hell is Sam Lloyd?
This is what I was asking. So for those of you not familiar with Sam, he says, he's most notable for playing Ted the lawyer on the TV show Scrubs. This is hard. You know, I really have to look this up. He's also the lead singer of a low-key band called The Blanks. He might not be everyone's cup of tea, but it's perhaps worth listening to him while he's still with us.
Yeah.
They did a really nice cover of Outkast's Hey Ya, and Sam is the only person I've heard who was able to pull off Morten Harkett's legendary high pitch and A-ha's 1985 hit Take On Me. Congratulations on your podcast rankings, and thank you for the work that you put into bringing us insightful and entertaining long-form conversations. Well, it's a pleasure, Chris. Thank you for your email. But I don't care enough about Sam Lloyd to go and listen to that song.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
Sorry. Maybe I'll do it when I've got like a lot of time over the Easter weekend or something. I'm not going to delete your email.
Where does one find time in this day and age where there's so much to watch, so much to listen to, so much to read?
Right. I mean, like, You know,
like I do not have extra time for anything.
I even have a schedule of podcasts now to get through. And podcasts used to be my fun time, right? Now, I feel pressure, which I've never felt before, to listen to all the different podcasts I have to listen to. And there are people here in the office who are telling me all the time, oh, have you listened to this? Have you listened to that? Have you listened to the other? So I'm feeling beleaguered.
So I shouldn't tell you about this podcast that I'm listening.
No, please don't. I've got enough homework. Oi, oi, oi. And then there's
stuff to rewatch, Gareth.
No, stop it. No. And Game of Thrones starting in 8 days.
No, not 8 days. Uh-huh. 5 days.
Is it five?
Yeah, it's on Sunday, Baba.
Oh, my God.
Today is Thursday.
Oh, it's starting on Sunday.
Can't
I thought it was much further. Well, this is so exciting.
You know what I would love to know? Because I'm one of the people standing in the queue. The number of people who are going to go and restart their DSTV.
Are you seriously? Just to get Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
You can get Netflix or whatever.
I've got Netflix, dude. The thing about licenses is that you know how this thing works, right? Nobody else has it.
Da, 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 da. I got you.
And I was saying to somebody the other day at work that the problem with not having it expressed from the US.
Yes, exactly.
Is that if you don't watch it in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to stay off the internet the whole bloody day.
That's right.
You're going to have to like avoid people. You're going to have to be in a bubble.
Apparently, these episodes are 90 minutes each. Could even be longer than that,
dude.
Yeah. So it's going to be like a feature film every week. I mean, that's quite incredible. You know, this just shows you that people, contrary to what the media has been selling us for years about how everybody just wants bite-sized chunks. You look at the popularity of podcasts, you look at how Game of Thrones has gone to feature film length for television. It turns out people do like complex narratives. They do like stories that you need to get to know the characters in, that there's a lot of work. It's almost like a novel, you know, and it comes from a novel, obviously. But people love that long form stuff.
Yeah, we don't talk about the game. We don't talk about the books, right? Because they're a heartbreak for some of us who've read the books.
Well,
it's heartbreaking.
Because the books and the show are following totally different storylines now, right?
Well, because the books are not finished.
Right. And now the TV show is going to ruin the books. Because guess what? The author, what is his name?
I forgot. I'll look just now.
He realized there's more money in the TV show than there is in the books, and he said, well, let me write the TV show script first, and then we'll get to the books later.
So I also think that maybe it just, you know, he lost interest.
So you're a big fan because it's also, for a lot of people, it's the most annoying week of the year then, because they're the ones who are going to tell you before you even ask, oh, I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know those people. They can't wait to tell you they don't watch it.
Yeah,
Anna, that's not for me. Like, oh, really? Thanks so much for sharing that. I'm so excited. All right. Couple of things to talk about before we get too deep into Game of Thrones. What's the guy's name? George R. R. Martin.
That's it. Because to write...
I think there are three R's. There's George R. 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 Martin.
Yeah, to write any of these kinds of books, like Lord of the Rings and all those things, you need lots of like...
In-between initials.
You need four names. Yeah.
J. R. R. Tolkien. George R. R. Martin. It even... Doesn't it fit into iambic pentameter or something? Jesus, this is complicated stuff. All right, well, Sia's not in this morning because he is in PE. So if you see someone who looks like Sia running around PE, it is him, just in case you were wondering.
But wave at.
He phoned me this morning. He's still a little ill, but he's out there working hard for us, and he's busy doing some work in Port Elizabeth.
He sent me a text at 22:25.
Oh, yeah?
I was like, okay.
Yeah, no, he phoned me this morning, and he said, I said, well, have fun in beautiful PE. So he goes, that's a bit of a contradiction because I've never said anything nice about PE. So I said, no, it's not a contradiction. It's an outright lie. And Pinky's here with us too. She is ready to take your calls and look after you. How are you, Pinky? Shame, poor Pinky's come under...
Okay.
Oh, there's your mic. All right. So Pinky's come under huge fire just because she's from the Free State, like everybody else in the Free State in the last week, thanks to Ace Magashule. It's become like an office joke. Anything that goes... wrong or badly or any story of corruption or any hint of anything, we all like look at Pinky and go, it's her and Ace.
Oof, Free State.
Who knew, eh? I mean, of all the provinces, like that's not even the best one to be corrupt in. Because when we weren't
looking.
I know. Unbelievable. What are your people saying in the Free State? Come on. Fill us in. What's the word
I'm
on the street?
I'm speaking to my sister in the Free State. I've cut all contact with everyone else from the Free State.
You've become totally Gauteng. Wow. All right. Well, there's probably quite a lot of noise going on there, I'd imagine, among, first of all, people who don't like Ace, and second of all, people who do.
Yeah.
And
those who are scared of him, yeah.
And Bloem is like a small town, right? I mean, everybody thinks it's this huge sprawling metropolis, and it's big. It's not, you know, it's not a little village, but everybody in Bloem knows everyone.
Yeah.
And that's a gossipy place, if ever I've seen one.
That sounds like any place.
Yeah, I know.
Place.
But Bloem is worse. I think it's because it's like a little, in some ways it's a nexus, because all the surrounding towns and all the rest of the Free State, everything kind of focuses on Bloem. So it's like the old idea of the capital of that province. It's really a capital because people go there. And it's also, it's like a thoroughfare. So you've got all the people from the north going south and all the south going north. But you've also got this idea that it's kind of isolated. It's in the middle of the country. And unless you have business in Bloem, you don't go there for holidays.
Yeah.
You know, not even Bloem people want to be there for holidays. And I know some people who are very seriously proud of the fact that they're from Bloemfontein. But it feels to me like it's this contradiction in terms, because it's central, but it's also totally isolated.
Yeah.
I think it leads to a different kind of mentality. Have you been to Bloem lately?
Lately. Not lately.
You see, exactly. That's my point.
It's been a while.
Pinky had problems like persuading friends to, come back to Bloem. We'll have a great time for the weekend. People were like, are you insane? All right. Fern sent me an email. Fern says, hi, guys. I was listening to the podcast about atheism being the biggest religion in the U.S. and need to put my 10 cents worth in. So what happened was, Leanne was reading out the story in the news. They've done some research in America. Apparently, the biggest religion now, in terms of, well, the biggest non-religion, because this, you know, atheism is not a religion. It's like saying bald is a haircut. So apparently, it's 24-25% of the population now identifies not being religious, which is kind of surprising, I've got to say. I thought, you know, especially in America, there'd be a lot more religion. Mm-hmm. Anyway, turns out that that's the story. And we got into talking about it, and I just said, you know what, there used to be this time where that stat would have made me happy and I would have been excited about it. But actually, I don't have the problem that I used to have with religion, and I certainly don't. If people don't ask me directly, I don't volunteer that information. And
I saw that block.
I've just grown up a little bit, I hope, Pumi. I hope. We must talk about what you think of the rest of it with the voting, because, you know, I know you could be a bit of an actor. Don't just laugh at me. What are you laughing at me for?
Oh, Gareth.
I can hear when you're laughing with me and when you're laughing at me. All right, so this is what Fern says. As religion declined, societal ills increased. I don't agree with that. I think that requires a whole lot more investigation and also depends on who wrote the article. I attended a Catholic high school and emerged as an atheist. I'm a fulfilled, generally happy being. I have good days and bad days. I went through a bad patch when I was on antidepressants for a short while. I think the reason why so many people are on meds is because they're so much more freely available now. Fellow atheists I know also tend to be pretty decent, well-adjusted people. Societal ills have always been with us. We're more open about them now. I think that's probably about right. People are willing to admit, you know, I was abused. People are willing to admit I've got an alcohol problem, like they weren't before. If you'd done that one generation ago, you would have been a pariah. Mm. I think she makes a very good point there. And I also think that these are kind of unrelated in some way, because you get good people who are religious and you get bad people who are religious. You get good people who are atheist and bad people who are atheist. I don't think that is necessarily an indication of morality, and I'm finding myself agreeing with Fern here. Don't you think?
So I do think. I think that the availability of choice is one of the things that has made but also the acceptance of different people has also made it easier to be different.
Yeah, try being an atheist in 16th century Europe. It wouldn't have gone well.
It might have ended with you on a stake.
That's right.
With some fire.
And being taught, being, you know, turned into steak.
Because we were talking about all the things there are to watch. I've been rewatching Mad Men.
Oh yeah.
And I am astounded at how 1960s must have been like. Half the stuff, half the shit that goes on in that thing, right? I'm just like, if that today, my goodness, that kind of
but
like
imagine,
being.
But imagine how someone's going to feel looking back on us now in 50 years' time. That's what makes me interested, because the things that we think are completely inoffensive and unimportant now, and the way we talk to each other, the way we treat each other, the issues we think we have. Imagine if 50 years from now, they laugh at that and turn it into a TV show where someone says, oh, how quaint, how backward.
But but the thing for me with Mad Men is, because like you know, history is a fascinating thing for me, is the cyclical nature of human beings being. Because when I think about kind of ancient Roman and mm-hmm. ancient Greek times and how permissive those cultures were,
sure,
I'm astounded. I'm like, how did they go from that to that insane archaic behavior that's displayed in
someone who studies history one day will look at the Clinton era into the Bush era into the Obama era into the Trump era and ask the same thing in a much shorter space of time, right?
It's all such a... And for me,
we all
think we're all thinking
we're heading in a positive direction. Like, we tend to believe we're better than our ancestors. And I even think this, and to a large degree, the evidence is on our side for this, that we're moving in a positive direction, that things are getting better for humanity. There's less conflict. We really have, when we talk about a lot of the things that we suppose plague our society, a lot of them are, in inverted commas, first world problems. Like people complaining about not having access to cheap data or free Wi-Fi or, you know, a lot of this. And then you've got the people who are complaining about stuff that should have been sorted out 50 years ago that reminds you actually in some places there's no progress.
Mm. I'm telling you. We're moving back to the way, I think in the way that society has become in its openness and acceptance of the individuality of people, we're moving back into an ultra hedonistic lifestyle.
I like it. Don't you? Come on. I mean, don't you want your kid to grow up with precisely these things you're talking about? Options.
Absolutely.
I mean, how old is Kanekho now?
Oh, now you ask.
11
years old, yes.
I know your son's age better than you.
If
that's
you ask him, he'll tell you he's turning 12.
Yeah, of course.
That's why I'm so confused.
What is it in Mad Men that you immediately thought, my God, this is so weird. It's like a different planet.
Everything. Everything. But for me, watching it again, right, is having... myself grown up in South African advertising, it's always been something that fascinated me, and I loved all the references, and it's so well done because of that, right? Yeah. Watching it again, I am appreciating the story of that poor desperate housewife, Draper's wife.
I've never watched the show. So
really?
No.
Oh, gosh. But watching that storyline unfolding and how even, you know, how desperate she was, how terribly sad she was.
Just
how...
remind me on this thing. A little later on, I need your advice on something. A friend of mine, it's a whole long story, but she is, I'll give you a pricey. She's my age, unmarried, been through a couple of relationships, some of them successful, some of them not. But she asked me the other day to set her up with someone who I've really just met. And she's like, oh, you know this guy. It's very awkward because I don't know him well at all. I'm very nervous to set them up on it. I don't believe in this pushing people together thing. I mean, there are a lot of people who like that matchmaker role. I'm not one of them. I stay the hell away from people's relations because it can get very sour and then you're to blame. So I just let people find their way, and I'm always supportive. And if it goes wrong, I don't choose a side, you know. Stay away.
You often. Don't?
Never.
Yeah, but
never. You must, yeah. No, because if they get back together, you're a total asshole either way.
Bona. It depends on how much the person means to you, right? Whichever side you choose.
Mm.
You must be willing. But also, and this I learned with my friends, right, is that if we must give you a fail cake, because you're the, like, the trashy boyfriend or whatever. We will totally give you a fail cake because she's given us the permission for the fail cake. And if they get back together, woman, and we must love you
fail
again.
Cake.
And we must love you
stinker.
Again. We'll love you again. It's, you know, ain't nothing wrong with that. She's our girl. We support her.
Yeah, but sometimes what happens is, and now we're going down another line, but sometimes what happens is they get back together and then she goes, oh, I remember Pumi said that about you. Well, Pumi's a bitch, huh? And then you're the problem. Because it's easy for people to do that. They love to, like, scapegoat and project their problems onto someone else so that they don't have to own them. And then eventually, before you know it, you're the reason they broke up. You know how people are. They compound things. And anyway, so this friend of mine has asked me to now set them up. I'm reluctant to do it because she's a little crazy. I mean, she's my friend and I love her, but she's crazy, right? I don't know him at all. I know him. We've had a couple of meetings. That's it, business meetings. She says she's like head over heels for him, but I don't even know how she knows him because I don't think they actually know each other. I think she's just obsessed, which is dangerous. And she's sounding like she's a bit desperate. And the reason I started thinking about her is you mentioned the desperate housewife from Mad Men. I was like, oh, shit, I've got to sort this out today. Because I've either got to give her an answer and say, can't help you. This is, you're going to have to do this one on your own. Or I'm going to have to do it and take my chances. I mean, it could end up being great for both of them.
What's the worst case scenario?
That she ends up angry with me that it did or didn't work. Because that is sometimes how women are. They blame the wrong person. And that maybe it goes really well and it might mess with the business relationship that I've got going with him, which is more important. I don't know. I mean, what do you think, Pinky?
I think don't do it.
Thank you.
Really? Yeah,
no,
Pinky?
I don't support today. And you said your friend's crazy.
Well, when I say crazy, she's one of those people who...
Don't do it. Business first.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Pumi disagrees.
Dude, Pinky, remind me not to ask you for like this kind of advice in future. Give the girl his number. What is wrong with you? You know what? You're becoming like a classic cock blocker,
it's not
right?
Just she doesn't just want his number. She wants me to set them up.
No.
I'm not going to do that.
Yeah,
I've
so
never done that in my life.
So you don't have to go that far. Okay. What you can do is you can
send
a text to both of them and say, I meet so-and-so, meet so-and-so, so-and-so,
right.
Meet so-and-so, and send them out into the universe. Then they can decide how they take it forward.
Is that more palatable, Pinky?
No, I say don't do it.
You people.
All right, let me just finish Fern's email here, because Pumi and I have a tendency to go off
Sorry,
on tangents.
Sorry, Fern.
No, no. So she says, fellow atheists I know tend to be pretty decent, well-adjusted people. Societal ills have always been with us, but we're more open about them now. That's all. To try and make a correlation between losing religion and people becoming worse is puerile. But this is what a lot of religious people do, is they'll often claim that you're immoral if you're not religious. And the two are obviously quite different. Not all religious people, but a lot of them say that. And a lot of people who are atheists believe themselves to be intellectually superior when actually... A lot of it is just like religion. They just believe. You know, and they're fervent, and it's very irritating. Majority of mass killings in the U.S. take place in the Bible Belt. Many studies have shown that serial killers tend to come from very religious families.
Mm-hmm. Repression.
Yeah. For me personally, one of the happiest days of my life was when I figured out that man made God, not the other way around. I'm an artisan baker, and listening to your podcasts while I'm baking is my daily brain food. How awesome. Thank you, Fern. Very nice. Any comments there, Pums?
Daily brain food while making the daily bread.
Hmm. There we are.
Wow,
that sounds
Fern.
Quite religious, doesn't it? Give us today
we
our
saw
daily
that.
Bread.
We saw that, Fern. We saw that.
Yeah, all right.
You ain't slick.
All right. Oh. Nice. Needed to stretch.
Oh, is that more than smart?
Isn't it always a good idea to stretch in the morning? I've had such like an uncomfortable sleeping position for the last couple of nights because my neck is... I don't know, it's just like makes clicking noises. I think I just need to go for one of those skin sense massages. That'll sort me out, don't you think?
Yeah. Gareth, this statement around like where your neck creaking and
yeah,
stuff
a little click
and your blog together together.
I'm getting
old.
Hey?
Don't bode well for you.
So tell me, what do you think of the blog? By the way, it's available on cliffcentral.com. You can listen to it if you prefer to listen to it because you've got no time to read.
Because it's easier to drive and listen.
Yeah, it's basically, should you vote? How I've reformed my position on certain things. And you don't owe an explanation to anyone.
It was not vintage Gareth. That's what I think about that. I know Gareth, I know it feels like when you were writing it, you were like, this is me becoming, you know.
It's cathartic.
Me becoming distinguished. What did you say? You said, is it mature? You talked about kind of like aging.
Yeah.
No,
it's an aspect of getting older. What, you don't like that?
I think you're feeling how almost all of us are feeling, like the oppression of 2019, being that it's only like the first quarter. But 2019 has been a bit much for us all. And it's the burden, I think we're buckling under the weight of 2019.
Promise, so you thought it was a bit defeatist?
No, it was a little... It felt to me when I was reading it, why I'm saying it's not vintage Gareth. Where is this guy's energy and joy? And, you know, it sounded a little bit like...
Cynical.
But
grumpy old man.
And that is not you. It's so not you, guy. And I feel like after the elections... When we've got all of this bullshit, you know, like you started with no more bullshit.
Yes.
When we've got all of this behind us, all of this like hecticness of electioneering and mudslinging and all of that stuff,
right.
You'll feel your energy come back.
It's funny. I'm not coupling my state of happiness to politics. I don't. I'm not one of those people who's that I'm actually not that interested in politics anymore. I used to be.
So... Now, this is, you know, the South Africa in general, like Twitter particularly, we're always psychoanalyzing the world.
Sure.
We're always psychoanalyzing South Africa, society, da 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 da. All that stuff is energy sapping. And the things that sap your energy don't feel like they're sapping your energy.
Mm.
They don't feel like that's what they're doing. But what it does is it makes you sluggish. It doesn't mean you are unhappy. It's a little bit like... I'm tired.
Feels like a bad meal.
It's a little like, this could have been better, but it's not. So when I read it, I thought, oh, wow. So, and I just feel like it's all around us. It's like a big cloud all over South Africa. You meet people, and almost universally, you meet people and everyone's just feeling a little bit like, meh.
So I should vote.
Damn straight.
Yeah, I don't know.
You have to vote. If you don't vote, you know, the way I see it, if you don't vote, it takes away your right to complain.
No, I think you always have the right to complain. People will complain. I mean, people complain about being sick, and they didn't ask for that. They didn't participate in that necessarily. All right, lots of news. So let's get into some headlines. Are you ready for those, Pums?
Is anyone ever ready for headlines in South Africa?
Yeah. I mean,
no.
First of all, did you see the video footage of that Serbian guy who got shot in a complex in Bryanston? They were sending it around on WhatsApp yesterday.
I don't watch those things.
Oh, my God. So the guy is in his car. He's pulling out of a parking. Another car pulls in, starts shooting. You just see the bullets and the
like
smoke.
Like a video game.
Yeah, it's like a video game. And then this dude who got killed gets out of the car and
no
runs.
No bloody ways!
He runs. Now, that's the... He's in an armored car, by the way, because he's obviously...
He needs an armored car.
Right, and he's a dodgy dude, and he's had assassination attempts on him before in Bedford View. So whoever...
Which is why we never go to Bedford View.
Ever. Ever. I've got friends in Bedford View. I tell them to meet me somewhere else, you know?
What?
So this guy, let me tell you what his name is, because it's actually a fascinating...
He gets out of the car and is running
crazy, where? Right? He's running, like, back into his house in a complex, and that's when the guy guns him down. It's unreal. So let me just read to you so you know the name. The person is Ivan Jordevic, who survived an attempted hit in Bedford View 2 years ago. He's gunned down and killed in a Bryanston complex. This is yesterday. And it's just unbelievable.
Mudimu.
Yeah. And then the guy who shoots him gets away. But you see, like, the bullets.
Do not show
the
me.
Bullet holes in the car, and there's Kevlar under the car doors. And it's just like, really, this guy knew they were coming for him. It's just unreal. Anyway, so there's been another guy killed and two others injured on Wednesday afternoon in a shooting incident in Berea in Johannesburg. Paramedics said they were dropping off a patient at a hospital near Hillbrow when a private vehicle rushed in with two gunshot victims. Hospital staff assessed the patients and declared one man, believed to be in his 30s, dead. ER24 paramedics and hospital staff quickly assessed the patients, and found one man, believed to be in his 30s, had sustained fatal gunshot wounds. Nothing could be done for him. He's declared dead. Second guy was assessed and found to sustain a gunshot wound to the arm. The man was treated and handed over to hospital staff for further treatment. Isn't this the Wild West?
Huh?
Then, Busisiwe Mkhwebane and the South African Human Rights Commission are going to intervene in Alex. I don't know how, but the Public Protector and the Human Rights Commission said they were going to combine efforts in a bid to get to the bottom of service delivery complaints that have given rise to recent violent protests in Alex, north of Johannesburg. Alexandra residents have been protesting after poor service delivery since last week. But it's not unironic that this is happening just a few weeks before the election. It's not unironic that the two political parties that are at the front of this are at loggerheads themselves and are fighting for votes in this little township, huge township actually, the DA and the ANC. They're both blaming each other for this. Communities, in our experience, take to the streets when they are of the view that their cries have fallen on deaf ears, said Busisiwe Mkhwebane. It's important for people to be aware that Chapter 9 of the Constitution establishes the South African Human Rights Commission and my office, essentially for people to vindicate their rights on matters such as public service delivery. Again, what are you going to do? What is Busisiwe and what is the Human Rights Commission? Are they going to come there in their blue light brigade? They're going to be led around the township by councillors or by people who are important in the community. They're going to go, this is terrible. We're going to say, that's awful. We're going to definitely hold government to account for this. And then they're going to go back to their offices and maybe send an email.
You know, most people, almost like universally across every sector, are in the job of keeping themselves employed. So okay. Most people are just
so this is what
they're keeping
doing.
Themselves employed.
They're just doing enough. Right. And this is what Busisiwe Mkhwebane and the Human Rights Commission are doing.
Yeah, but no, you...
So apparently Bongani Majola of the Human Rights Commission met with Busisiwe Mkhwebane on the matter on Tuesday and resolved... I love these. This always sounds like it's action, but it's just people sitting talking. Resolved to launch a joint investigation with a view to find lasting solutions to residents' grievances. So they're going to sit and talk. And then after that, they'll resolve to talk some more. Can you imagine how much that's helping the residents of Alexandra? This is interesting. South African astrophysicist is among a group of astronomers that captured and revealed the first image of a black hole, which is 55 million light years away from the Earth and 6.5 billion times bigger than the sun. Just, you know, these numbers are extraordinary. So apparently, the University of Pretoria's astrophysicist Professor Roger Dean, who was born in Welkom, was part of the group of scientists who captured the first image of the black hole, which has been described as a supermassive black hole.
Yes, yes, Pinky, Welkom.
In
Freistaat.
Very nice. All right, so we'll own this. That's great.
Dean's group, so happy.
Dean's group worked to develop simulations of the complex Earth-sized telescope used to make this historic discovery. Wow, it's amazing. I mean, it's just, have you seen these pictures? I mean, it doesn't look like much in the pictures. It's mostly obviously black, and then there's this round halo of orangey.
Light.
Yeah, and then in the middle is a circle. It's a perfect circle. And it's just dark. And apparently that is an event horizon of a black hole.
It actually looks like the poster for The Ring.
Yeah. Some people say it's like the Eye of Sauron from
Oh, yes.
Lord of the Rings. So there's a good
it
story.
It looks like all of those things.
Well, I mean, we can be proud that one of our scientists had something to do with this.
From Velcom.
Yeah. I mean, but it's not as if we're up there in the science discoveries anymore. So
But it's not from UFS.
No.
It's from UP.
No. Let's just not give all the credit to Velcom. I'm sure if he'd stayed there, he wouldn't have achieved very much. The Vatican is working on a papal document that would establish procedures for Catholics to report bishops suspected of sexual abuse or negligence in sexual abuse cases, according to Vatican sources. Why is it so difficult to get these guys to move on this stuff? It's now 2019. This has been going on for the 1,000 years that the Catholic Church has been in existence. Almost 2,000 years that the Catholic Church has been in existence. How is it possible that only now they're working on? Talk about Busisiwe Mkhwebane and the Human Rights Commission doing nothing. Now they're working on a papal document that could establish procedures. I mean, guys.
Who guards the guardians?
Really? Yeah, just, you have the power to hand these priests over to authorities. Everywhere that you are with your priests, these countries have their own jurisdiction. You can't keep protecting them, which a lot of popes have done, a lot of priests higher up the hierarchy have done. You're aiding and abetting child rape. It's just disgusting. Someone has got to take control of this. And working on a document that could establish procedures sounds like a hell of a circuitous route to trying to get some justice for these young people. And some of them who are now much older and were abused. It's just appalling. I don't know how the Catholic Church is not prioritizing this above all else at the moment. Because it's become a nest of vipers. Just unreal. I mean, I get angry just thinking about it. And then, poor old Chancellor Angela Merkel has lost her mom. Helene Kastner has died. She's the mother of Angela Merkel, the mother of the Chancellor. Without providing further details, the spokesperson for the government said the former Latin and English teacher died earlier this month at the age of 90, according to the Bild newspaper. She gave birth to the future world leader in Hamburg in 1954, moving to the former East Germany just weeks later with her daughter and husband. Now that's interesting. They wanted to move into East Germany because that's clearly where they ended up, and Angela was there when the wall came down in 1989. Her father was a pastor, Horst Kastner. Merkel answered questions in Parliament on Wednesday before heading for a European Union summit on Brexit in Brussels. Can you imagine how excited she is to talk Brexit after her mother's just died? This is where, like, you forget these people are human. You forget that this poor woman now has to go and deal with Theresa May and the European Union and Brexit and put all of her focus and attention on it. Look, your mother's in her 90s. You know, she's not going to last forever, but it's still tough.
It's still your mom.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. At least her mother got to see her become Chancellor of Germany. You know, a lot of the
unified.
I know. I mean, a lot of parents don't get to see their kids succeeding like that. And, you know, to have a daughter who's the Chancellor of Germany, she must have died proud. So there we go. Those are the things you need to know today. Is that exciting for you?
No.
Not?
No.
God, I'll get back to work immediately.
you know what I have been finding quite exciting and energizing?
Go on.
On the timelines, people post things like Serbian people getting shot up in their armored cars. And, but it is graduation season.
Ah.
And I love it. I love it. All the people posting with their graduation gowns and outside at the, you know, so 2 weeks ago, it was all the VITSIs.
Yes.
And starting yesterday, it's all the UCT guys. It is astounding for me. It's so wonderful to see that joy and excitement and exuberance of youth.
I think it's great. Yeah.
It's one of the things that I'm always so afraid to open like pictures. You know, Twitter shows you that window pane, and a lot of people have like hidden rubbish, right? You click on the thing and when the big picture comes, there's like, it makes you go, whoa. But this one, every time I see, I don't know who these people are. I don't know anyone graduating.
No, I don't either. I did mention a friend of mine got a doctorate.
Ooh.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, that's a hell of an achievement. Don't the doctors wear a different kind of an outfit and a different hat?
Yeah, it's that floppy hat.
Yeah.
It's like my floppy.
The one, yeah.
Looks like a cushion.
The bachelor's and the master's degrees, you get the normal mortarboard thing, right? But the doctors, they wear a floppy hat.
And then, baba, then it's you know it's on. You know it's on when the gown is different. It ain't that's black. Brilliant. It's, you know, when there's a new, well, like green or red or whatever. Absolutely. But you know what I've also absolutely been loving is, what's her name? Mamukheti Pakeng at the Chancellor at UCT.
Mm-hmm.
She runs that hashtag Deputy Mother.
Oh, yeah?
And she's been amazing to watch because she has absolutely made sure that the way she's centered her tenure is she's going to be about the students. You see her, she's very active on Twitter. She posts all the time. She does walkabouts at the various campuses and boarding houses.
She calls herself Deputy Mother. Now, I'm just wondering, because this irritates me about universities, and it's one of the reasons they're becoming less and less relevant. And while I'm excited that there are a lot of people qualifying, I hope that some of them will find jobs, because then there aren't jobs for all of them. Here's the reality. Universities have in some ways also become substitute parents.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that she calls herself Deputy Mother mm-hmm. just makes it abundantly clear that that's the truth. They've become places of accommodation, mm-hmm. places that provide food, places that are essentially like, it's almost like a deputy social work more than it is a university. And a lot of the stuff people are studying is pointless and useless, like a lot of the humanities things. And I know people will disagree with me. But here's the big problem I have. Is that it's prolonging adolescence well into people's 20s. You know, there was a time where by the age of 20, 24, you were out there working. You had to get on with it. The fact that there are still 28, 29, 30-year-olds at university, and there are a lot of South African universities are full of people in their late 20s and early 30s, I don't think that those people are yet making a productive effort to be valuable to society because academia cocoons them. And by prolonging adolescence, you don't have to look very far to see that South African universities have become really a place where people are coddled, they are nurtured for too long, there's a deputy mother running around holding people's hands and telling them that this is a safe space for them and that they are going to be looked after, their tuition will be paid. It's almost like we're overcompensating for the fact that families have broken down, that people are no longer being, the first and primary responsibility should be the parents' responsibility. And because in South Africa we've got a major problem there and we're not addressing that problem, universities have become quasi-parents. And I don't know that that's a good thing.
So I think that universities have assumed that role because university students have become so much younger. Over the past 30, 40 years, the average age of students at universities has dropped to basically their teenagers. They're 17, 18, 19-year-olds, whereas before, I mean, if you think about Steve Biko was 30 when he was at university. A lot of people across the world used to come to university much older, so they didn't need that. But when you send an 18-year-old off to, you know, from the Free State to...
Don't talk
UP.
About Pinky like that.
Yeah, Pinky, you're absolutely right. You're sending basically a child, and the reality of it is that over there, far away, wherever they are, they're still. It's not that you are prolonging their adolescence because that's where they still are. At 25 years old, most of us, our brains are just becoming mature. You know, so the job exists because the space is needed. So I don't think that it's because we're mollycoddling these kids. I think it's an important part of growing that they need that.
Yeah, but that doesn't sound like the job of a university to me.
But
like
for the job of a university, but this is the point that I want to make. The thing for me is that the job of a university truly is to make you more confident out in the world, one. Two, it is to teach you how to find the answers to the problems. You and I are currently not doing what we studied. In fact, the statistics are that something ridiculous like about 70% of people do not end up doing in their job what they studied to do. It is because there's the job of university is to give you the confidence to know that you are teachable and that you can find the answers to the problems and the problem solving. I think that humanities are an incredibly important skill. And more we're seeing that humanities are going to become the more important skill as AI grows, because those mundane tasks, those things that are repetitive, all of those things, you can teach machines to do. You need people to think.
No, I think we need people to
think.
To do engineering, science, medicine. Those are the things you should go to university for. The rest you can study in your spare time. And if you don't know how to, you can ask. There's plenty of places. You can learn online these days. But universities become like a secondary home. And you even hear people talking about universities like it's a place they feel something. I mean, I don't feel a damn thing about the university I went to, and I study humanity things, so it might sound like I'm talking against myself here, but the fact is, like, universities have transformed into places, not just here in South Africa, by the way, but all over the world, where they become almost like a hostel stroke secondary parent thing, a community thing, place for activities other than studying thing, and all of this.
They are a place for growing up.
That's fine, but I don't think that should be subsidized by government. I don't think that's government's role to raise other people's children. I think that's dereliction of duty on the part of the parents. I don't think it's government's role, and government subsidizes every student. Even if you're paying full fees, government's still subsidizing you. It's to the tune of something like 2/3, remember? And I don't know that that's a good way for us to spend our tax money. Plus, it burdens with a lot of these kids with having to repay those loans well into their working life. And I don't know that it's worth it anymore. I think you can go online. You can learn things there. This credentialism that we're obsessed with, that if you don't get a degree, you're not going to be able to make a contribution to society, is a major problem too. I think that people with degrees, great. They've worked. They've proven they can work. They've proven they can apply themselves. But you wouldn't look at, and I'm guessing here, Pums, because I know you, but you wouldn't look at someone's CV and go straight to their qualifications, would you?
No, because that's not what I need.
That's exactly my... I wouldn't
But
need that
what either. I do need is I need people that know how to find the answers to problems. I need people who know how to... And unfortunately, you don't learn that at school. You don't learn that at
no.
school. You don't. What you don't learn at school is you don't learn how to do adequate research. What you don't learn at school is how to be confident about seeking answers. That's what I learned in tertiary. Mm. What I learned in tertiary is how to find answers. Napping. Yeah, look at her. Yeah. She's nodding.
Going back to the deputy mother, mm-hmm. I hear what you have to say. But I think the main reason why students have put her in that place is because as a black student, most of them don't have anyone in the institution to look up to who's black. So it's kind of given them like that hope, you know? Or, I mean, she's quite active even on Twitter. You send her a tweet, she'll reply. And she doesn't take nonsense, hey? Because a while back, there was a doctorate student who was like, I'm suffering, I don't know what to do. And she was like, okay, leave it. If you want to be this weak, leave it. Don't do it. You don't
have
to do it. Yeah.
She's wow. tough, eh?
Yeah. So I think it's a matter of having someone who you can relate to, who's motivating you and seems like you can get a hold of her, and hence the whole deputy mother.
Okay.
What I love about her as well is that also understanding the social dynamics of a lot of students is that they don't have parents who have been through that system.
Yeah, so
they
it's
don't
a new
have
thing.
They have nobody to go back to and benchmark against.
Yeah.
They have nobody. A lot of them, a lot of people's parents and grandparents never had the opportunity to go to university. So well, this world is a completely different.
Neither
world.
Of my parents went to university, and they were hugely insistent as a result that I did, and I think it was a waste of my time. It's a very unpopular point of view, but I do not believe university did me that much good, honestly, and I've looked at it as objectively as I can post fact. The courses I did were completely pointless and useless to me, and remain so, all of them. Not one of them was useful to me. I studied law, which I would have made a terrible lawyer. It's been peripheral interest. All the other things I'm interested in have done way more for me than law did. And if I think about those textbooks and I think about those exams, It's just I could have spent that time. I could have got into the working world earlier. I could have maybe done what a lot of people did and maybe explored the world a little bit more. I mean, I look at Sia, for example, who he's studying now post because he wants to, you know, have some credentials and some degrees and qualifications, which is great. It's admirable. But Sia came out of school. Sia is so much more advanced than I was at 24 because university kept me immature.
It's fascinating that you say that. And Sia is one of the people I had extensive conversations. You know, I work with a lot of young people. Conversations with, you have to give yourself the time to learn, but also give yourself the time to become more of a world person. And what university does, or what it did for me, was it gave me the time to learn. It really gave me the opportunity to immerse myself in a subject matter. And having studied film, you know, it gave me the time to immerse myself in a subject matter that I completely love. But it also gave me lots of other bits of information about that particular. I would not be able to do what I do today had I not been through the rigor of the degree that I did. And fascinating that you say you believe Sia to be worlds further than where you were. When I compare myself to Sia, sorry, Sia, I know you're listening, right? I find Sia, compared to a 25-year-old me, I find Sia so immature.
Really?
And I think it is because...
Hang on, the lines are lighting up. It's probably Sia on every line.
Because, and I truly believe it's because what he didn't give himself the opportunity to do is to open his world further than one aspect. So Sia's world is media. Sia's world is this particular world that we are in because that's all he spent his energy and time on. And what he's not had the opportunity to do is explore a wider world.
But you
world.
Could argue the same thing is true of someone who studies a course like engineering or film, let's say. And that's all they spend their world in for like 3 or 4 years. And they're not even getting the practical experience of working in a job where there are consequences to failure. My point is just this. I honestly believe I could have spent that time and my parents' money, which I then had to pay back, so it was my money. I could have spent all of that better. For me, not to go. Other people, sure, go to university. And I do believe that there is a place for them. I think eventually they'll all be online. So it's not going to – there won't be a campus. There won't be lecturers. All of that's going to change. It's going to go online, and a lot of people are going to find themselves irrelevant.
Well, so Muzi's just my business partner. You know Muzi very well. He's just completed a course with MIT.
Oh, wow.
On, funny enough, artificial intelligence.
Wow.
And in particular, because we're kind of looking at how that's going to affect our business in the next couple of years. But it's fascinating for me how you can do that now. So he obviously did a paid for course, but I love the fact that, and again, you know, we were talking earlier about time. I have no time for anything else because what I'd love to do is there's so many free courses from MIT to Harvard to Coursera. Everybody's got free courses and stuff is available online. And if you're lucky enough to have like data.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even a lucky
data
enough
and
thing.
Time.
You've got to ask these days, is it a human right, you know? This is the point, and that's a first world problem. But one thing I did take out of university, which I'm eternally grateful for, is I made friends there that I've been friends with ever since, and that have those people who added massive value to my life. Can't remember the name of one lecturer, but they really did. So that was something to take away from it. But Pinky, you're the most recent university graduate of the three of us talking now. I mean, do you feel... similarly, or how do you feel about the whole thing? Forget about UCT as an example, your university.
I'm a bit in between because there's times when I feel like most of the time I feel like my LLB degree is worthless, you know? Even from the curriculum that we had and what's actually happening in practice, I feel like the law school should be better structured. And I don't know, I remember in first year, I knew already that I didn't want to study further, but I just had to because my sister was paying and I was like, I'm going to be the only, I have to be the first graduate in the family. So,
right.
Yeah.
So it was pressure.
Yeah.
You know what I also took out, which has also been the best career advice I've ever had, to worry about the relationships that I have at my level. So if a boss of mine said, don't worry about your bosses, worry about your peers. So build strong relationships with your peers, both at university and in your first job, in first entry level, anything. Because as you grow in your career, all those people grow in their careers. And they become that strong network. So when you are a senior executive, they will also be CEOs and heads of whatever. And if you've built strong relationships there, at the time when you need to have powerful relationships, you will have powerful relationships.
That's beautiful. That's good advice. All right, we come back with the Burning Platform in a moment or two. Ivo Fechter will join us on the line. We'll talk about some of the things in the news this week, and that's brought to you by Nando's. But today, being Thursday, Alan Ford comes in, and he and Nathan Rowe are on the Unview today. It's all about theater with Monte Cassino. Classical ballet likes to take itself seriously, which may explain why you don't get many comedies on the ballet stage. Yet those of us who love tutus and tiaras also like nothing better than a good laugh. What am I talking about? Well, on The Unview with Alan Ford and Nathan Rowe today, three of the international stars from Men in Tutus will be live in studio. Pumi, I know you'll be listening to this.
Men in Tutus.
Yeah, there we go. They also welcome the incredible Candice van Litsenborg, who's the award-winning actress from the musical Into the Woods. Listen today at 9 a.m. or get the podcast on cliffcentral.com. It's all about theater with Monte Cassino. They've got it. Alan Ford working overtime to bring you the best in live performance in South Africa. And particularly at Monte Cassino, where they really do support the arts. All right, lots of stuff to come. Stick around, cliffcentral.com. You know, someone brought up Outkast this morning in an email.
Oh, yes.
Yes, so it made me think of this song, which I absolutely love. And this will hopefully make you feel better this morning, too.
This is cliffcentral.com.